Thank you very much. I was delighted recently to share a platform with Michael in his own constituency, because one of the things that the National Union of Teachers is doing is that we're saying it's no good us just having absolutely brilliant policies, which is what we've had for a long time. We actually have to be out there talking to people, because we all know that we're in a period just ahead of a really critical general election, and education for me will be one of the critical areas. Of course, everybody has their own critical areas. So let me start by saying, in this very room, about 18 months ago, I came to hear someone of whom some of you may have heard come to speak. His name is Pasi Sahlberg. He's a kind of educationist of sorts. He's not a trade unionist, and actually he worked for the OECD, so that provides an interesting set of credentials. But what he stood at the front here and said, and it was reasonably new at that time, was he said, the trouble with education is that we are suffering from the global education reform movement, and those of you who are very quick on the uptake will know that that spells germ, and it is indeed the germ that has infected education systems in a lot of places, much, much more vigorously in the US, in the UK, and to a large extent, regrettably, given its history, in Sweden. And lots of jurisdictions are suffering from aspects of the global education reform movement. It's characterised by the de-skilling of teachers, and actually saying that, frankly, anybody can be a teacher, because all you really need to do is deliver the curriculum, and I'll come to something from the OECD about that in a minute. It's characterised by an unbelievably overzealous testing regime, and I'm sure a lot of you know that children in this country are tested practically to destruction. But the other thing is, the reason, and it's also characterised by performance-related pay, it's characterised by an absolutely categoric market approach to the provision of education. And of course in Sweden, it's characterised by actual privatisation, where schools are run for profit. But they're run, of course, on taxpayers' money. So the profit is actually just the taxpayers' money going through the school and into the pockets of the people who have been given the schools to run. So the global education reform movement is a very big problem for us. And although we haven't got any schools at the moment being run for profit, and interestingly, just before his demotion, Michael Gove appeared to have put the question of schools for profit beyond peradventure, although Nicky Morgan has now said that she's prepared to listen to all ideas, so maybe that's coming back into the fray. And I think we all know, don't we, that education is both a human right and a public good. It's not a positional good, so it's good for some people and not so good for others. It's a public good, and should operate, therefore, to the advantage of everyone. Everyone should be able to access high quality education. So why are we concerned about the germ? Well, just this is a paper I got from the Trade Union Advisory Committee of the OECD only this week. This is a proposal for an annual summit on the global of the global education industry. Those of you who bother to read things that are put out by the World Bank and the IMF will know that their whole agenda is there is massive profit, there is massive money to be made from education. And the biggest way that you can make that is by de-skilling teachers, driving down their salaries, and of course ultimately by charging fees. But listen to this. As many other sectors of public policy before, education is now witnessing a growth in domestic and international businesses developing and selling educational resources, textbooks, software, courseware, educational services for schools, learning devices, learning platforms, dedicated IT solutions. Okay, so far, you'd say, well, that's the normal cut and thrust of what goes on. You know, there are firms, you know, there have always been firms who sold things to school, they sold them, you know, slates, and then they sold them pencils, and, you know, now they're selling them IT, OK? But listen to this. Additional educational offerings to parents and learners themselves, in some cases, even complete forms of distributed institutional delivery, with the potential to become a commercial subsector of the system. Now, I don't think that what I do and what NUT members do is institutional delivery. I think that what we do is teach people. And that means that you have to have an engagement with them. It means you have to be trained properly and you have to have an engagement with them. There actually has to be some physical presence in the classroom. Because it sounds to me like institutional delivery systems could be the kind of thing that we've seen from papers, from people, you know, not the people with whom I agree, but other people, who say, actually, what you can have is, you could have the kind of equivalent of MOOCs, of massive online courses that people can just, you can have 90 kids in a class, you can have a bit of delivery from the front, from IT, and maybe you can have a few people keeping order. That is not what we think is education. So what we've decided to do in the National Union of Teachers is to say that we need, in this period in the run-up to the general election, to rethink all of the things that we've got as policy. We need to characterise them and write them in a way that we think is completely accessible, which is what I've given you all, except those two people who came in after I've given them out, but I'll give you one later, called Stand Up for Education. This is the NUT's Manifesto for Education. I don't claim that it is the last word on everything that could be said about education. Of course it's not. Look how thin it is, and look how quickly you can read it. But what it does is to say that we believe, and we've worked very hard on this, that there are things that are being done at the moment which are the wrong things, and there are things that could be done. Not everything, I must say, actually costs a great deal of money. There are things, different ways that you could configure education, which we think would be more likely to result in the kind of education, the kind of education that we envisage and that we think very large numbers of parents envisage. If you look in the middle pages, for example, so you don't have to just take the numbers in from me. This is a survey of parents. It's done by YouGov. So this is not the National Union of Teachers, you know, getting everybody to just say what they want to say. And it is true that it was in April this year, but we're not very far beyond that. 90% of children thought, 90% of parents thought that a love of learning and gaining skills for adult life matters as much as high grades. In other words, what they're saying is education needs to be a rounded experience. And interestingly, the CBI, an organisation with whom we don't necessarily always have a very high degree of overlap in terms of policy terms, they actually say they think that the purpose of education is to make individuals rounded and grounded. And I think that's what parents are saying in that remark. 82% believe that publicly funded schools should only employ qualified teachers. Already in this country, with the academies and free schools being allowed to employ people to do direct teaching, to do actual teaching who are not qualified, 13% of the people in those sector of education are not qualified. And in Sweden, which was, of course, hailed as the great place to look to when they started doing all of their privatisation and changes, they have about 25-30% of teachers who are not qualified. And, of course, what's happened is that they were actually on quite a good trajectory, Sweden, in terms of pupil output. But they have actually plateaued, and last year they suffered from what they described as the PISA shock. Now, for any of you who don't know what PISA is, I don't mean that funny tower in Italy. I mean the Pupil International, whatever it's called, International Student Assessment. And it's tests that are done with 15-year-olds. I have to say, it's a massively flawed system, but it is very well regarded by a lot of organisations, and it's well regarded by a lot of governments. And the fact that Sweden, which had been on this good trajectory, which now has a privatised system with lots of unqualified teachers, has dipped in that, I think, probably does tell you something. So 82% of parents believe that publicly funded schools should have qualified teachers. 81% believe that local authorities should have the power to open new schools. Now, of course, if you haven't been paying attention recently, you might think, well, why would you even be asking that question? Surely local authorities can open new schools. We know that there are big demographic crises in lots of places. We know that in London there's a pupil place crisis in the primary phase, and there will be in the secondary phase. Of course it makes sense that local councils should open new schools, but actually that isn't the situation. The situation is now that almost anybody can open a school a lot more easily than a local authority. And 86% rejected schools being run for profit. And then only 77% said there should be a national pay system for teachers, but I'm not going to talk to you about teachers' pay and pensions tonight. And only 3% totally trusted the education secretary to make decisions on children's education. I wonder who they are, actually, of those 3%. Given that when we asked the question, it was Michael Gove, I really did wonder who those 3% were. But what's really interesting is I've just talked to you about Sweden and the difficulties that there have been in Sweden. And I should say that in the same meeting, Trade Union Advisory Committee to the OECD, where I got this report about IT and what I think would be a pernicious invasion into it, they do also, of course, say that in some countries, this is IT being used or edgy business being used a lot more. In some countries, this is now recognised and accepted as a reality. In some, it's heavily and often ideologically opposed as a privatised intrusion into an essentially public system. So I put my hand up to being ideologically opposed to a privatised intervention into a public system. So there are really big lessons that we can learn from Sweden. They're the wrong lessons. We shouldn't emulate them. They are now beginning to row back from all of those policies because they're doing a 20-year review, and they now say there are really big problems, and actually even the OECD is saying that. On the other hand, if we look at another country in Scandinavia, we look at Finland, that is characterised by a very different way of looking at education. So, for example, there aren't any tests until kids get to the public exam stage at about 16. They don't have an inspection service. I'm not even saying that we should have no inspection service. We shouldn't have the one we've got, because I think there are very big problems with it. But they have no inspection service in Finland. In fact, Pasi Salberg, of whom I spoke earlier, was the very last chief inspector in Finland. He was only in the post 2 weeks, and they closed the job up behind him because they said, we don't need an inspection service. We train, we're very choosy about who we take to be a teacher. We train them very well. We train them ongoing throughout their career, and therefore we trust them to do the job. And I think that the fact that only 3% of people trusted the Secretary of State to make decisions shows that actually there is potentially a lot of trust in teachers. Of course, some people will have stories about, well, you know, my child wasn't taught this or that very well at some stage. But this is, I'm talking about a systemic approach here to trusting teachers and therefore, we think, getting the best out of them. So the reason that we've gone for producing a manifesto is because we think that there are lots of things that need to be said. We do think we need a wider vision of education. We do think we need more teaching and less time spent testing and not teaching to the test. We do think that all children deserve qualified teachers. But then, of course, we also have a wider view. We absolutely believe we need to see the end of child poverty. Because, you know, although people who oppose some of the things that the National Union of Teachers will say, they will say, well, you always just use poverty as an excuse. You use it as an excuse. Of course all children can be successful. And what we say in the NUT is we don't use it as an excuse. But we do advance it as a reason. There are reasons why some children are able more easily to be successful than others. And if you actually have genuine early years education, where every child has the chance to begin at three, to develop all of those kinds of things, and every child has the same chance to go to a good quality primary school and a good quality secondary school, you are beginning to even out some of those things that you get through social class, through being in a middle class or an aspirant working class family. Not necessarily all of them, but certainly some of them. So child poverty is clearly a thing that we need to work on. We do need to have a coherent education system and not one that relies on whether a firm wants to come in and open up a school in a particular area. Because there'll be some areas where they don't particularly want to. And that's not a sensible way to make sure that there is a place for every child. And we need to knit back together the system that we've got, which is completely fractured. Some of you will know that one of the very good things that was done under the previous government was something called the London Challenge. The thing about the London Challenge was, it wasn't just a walkover, an easy thing for teachers. It was actually genuinely a challenge. You know, some people sometimes talk about challenge and they don't really mean challenge, but the London Challenge really was. It was to say to teachers, you know, there are things that are not going particularly well here. London used to be, of all the regions in the country, almost certainly the worst performing, educationally speaking. Although, I should say, in my defence, since I taught in London, we always did very well by children with special educational needs and children with free school meals. But in a general sense, someone's got to be the worst performing region, and London in that at that time was. The London Challenge said, what we need to do is play to the strengths of the workforce, because, you know, that's the biggest thing that you've got, your teachers and your other people who work in education. And actually making teachers work together, doing peer observation, sharing good practice, resulted in the fact that, that even though it was a bit funded, even though it's not funded any longer, the effect of that remained for a long time. Now, it's beginning to fracture because, you know, we've got too many academies, we've got too many schools that have that are working on their own. And if you have open enrolment and competitive enrolment, you know, schools are not going to work together as well as if you have all schools working together for the common good. So we do need to mend the fractured system. Clearly, we think that education should not be run for profit, and we do think that we need to invest in education. And finally, we have to make teaching an attractive proposition. At the moment, you'll notice that because of the work that the National Union of Teachers has done, lots of politicians, Nicky Morgan, Nick Clegg, David Laws, are talking about workload, teacher workload. Now, I don't like to talk down teaching, but, you know, Michael knows these figures. When we did a survey some while ago, just before the Tory party conference, what we found was that 90% of teachers who responded to the survey, and I'm talking about a survey over a weekend, I'm talking about 18,000 people responding to a survey over the weekend, our members, but, you know, responding quickly, 90% of them have considered leaving teaching in the last 2 years as a result of their workload. 88% know one or more teachers who've already left. We will not have the education system that our children deserve unless we can get teachers into teaching and keep them into teaching. So we need to keep them in teaching. So we absolutely do have to make teaching a more attractive profession. And we don't just do that by banging on about pay and pensions. We do it by saying teaching is a job which is valued, where you are trusted to actually carry out the work that you've been prepared to do. And that means coherent training, ongoing training throughout your career, teachers being valued and trusted to do the very best job that they can, because that's where they want to be. I'm not a delivery system. I'm a person who wants to engage with young people in the classroom. Thank you very much.